Demons Discuss, Take 27, The One with the Hag.
Welcome to Demons Discuss, the unofficial podcast about the All Souls universe and the topics that orbit it. We are your hosts, Angela, Jean, and Valerie. I'm Valerie, and with me is Angela and Jean. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
And today, what are we talking about, Jean?
Oh, we are talking about chapters 3 and 4, and we get to meet Widow Baton.
Yay.
I think.
I know.
Yay. Yay.
Yay.
And use some geometry. Boo.
Yay.
Oh my gosh. Ugh, so more sun.
Let's start with discussor emails and go ahead, Jean, start with yours.
Okay. I have a question that carried over from our last episode, and this is from Angela, New England Angela. I'm not sure if this came in the Facebook group or not. I actually think it may have come up in the last podcast. Diana starts writing in her journal that Matthew gave her at the old lodge. Her first entry is dated 10/31, where she writes about the weather and meeting Kit. However, didn't she and Matthew time walk at midnight on 10/31 in Madison? So does that mean they started 10/31 over, or is this a date issue? Good question.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm all for blaming it on the time zones.
Math is hard. No. A date issue. Now, I know we were talking about the calendar differences between...
Yeah, but that's 10 days.
Yeah. So, no, that wouldn't...
Did they time walk back around the other way through Australia? Across the date line? I don't know.
I don't know. It's magic? I don't know. That's what we say.
Right. When you can't explain something. And even Shelley said that in the last episode.
It's magic.
Science is magic. You can't explain it.
So,
or science you can't explain.
Yes.
There you go.
So what's her excuse for daylight savings time?
There is no excuse. There's no reason why I should be sitting in the dark with a happy light this time in the morning.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly.
Ugh.
Well, okay. Think of it this way, too. I don't know if this is correct, but October 31st, her entry was that she met Christopher Marlowe. So I don't know if they time walked at midnight, but let's say they arrived, you know, barring any times, transcontinental times difference, that they still arrived on October 31st. She did meet Christopher Marlowe then on October 31st. And then she immediately follows with an entry on November 1st.
Yes. And she all wrote that retroactively anyway, so.
Yes, she did.
It's not timey-wimey. It's just secretarial, I think.
Yeah.
And magic.
Yes, I like that. Let's blame magic.
That's just how we're going to deal with that from now on. It's magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Moving along. We have something from Wendy. And
yay!
Yay, Wendy. And she says, hello, Lady Demons. And hello, Wendy. Referring to Shadow of Night chapters. She said she was surprised by how quickly Matthew became more autocratic and dismissive of Diana when they arrived back in 1590. I expected his attitude would change some, but I didn't expect it to be so fast and abrupt. And I think you're not the only one, Wendy.
Yeah.
It was, whoa, where'd this dude come from?
Yeah.
I want the other guy back. What's up? And then she said, I always forget just how quickly Kit pisses me off. Almost from the first moment he opens his mouth, I want to smack him to make him show a bit more respect and kindness. I think that's what bothers me the most, the sheer meanness. And that was from Wendy. Thanks, Wendy. I can't say I disagree. But you guys have anything to add to that as far as Kit's?
Well, I'm always going to have something to add for Kit, because think about this. The love of your life pops up out of nowhere unexpectedly with a giantess in drag.
Yeah. I mean, I see it now with my daughter.
It's like, it's totally what the fuck.
Yeah. I mean, I see it now with my daughter, 11. She asked for a sleepover. Can she have two friends over? No, I will never allow the three dynamic because it never works out. There's someone that's always jealous and snarky, and the pairs may change throughout the night. But I think that was coming from a place of jealousy.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that him being mean or snarky or trying to degrade Diana is right, but I can see where he's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, it's not acceptable behavior, but I mean, we're looking at a triangle here, people.
Yeah.
There's no other way around it. And he's the odd man out, because as far as he knew, his best bud, Matthew, ran out to Chester to rendezvous on Thursday and was supposed to come back. And then all of a sudden, here's this chick with him. Like, it is a total what the fuck moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's on that linear timeline, and all of a sudden, everything's totally upended.
Yeah, I think so too.
So, I mean, we've never seen the Matthew from the first time with Kit. We may get a glimpse of a little bit of what it's like when they're out carousing on the town after the miscarriage later on down the line, but I don't think we ever get a true sense of
their relationship.
What their relationship was like pre-Diana.
Yeah.
And I would hazard a guess to say that it would probably shock a lot of readers if we ever do see what that dynamic was like with Kit and the dynamic with the rest of the School of Night pre-Diana.
I think it's a case, too, of the reader not believing Matthew. He said it at the end of Discovery of Witches, I wouldn't trust you with my old self. I mean, so imagine if he says it, what he was like back then.
Oh, I think he's a total hellraiser and a lot closer to Domenico than people want to allow themselves to think, to be honest with you.
Well, speaking of Domenico, I hope we do get a sense of his...
Oh my God.
I hope we get a sense of his exploits. And I mean, the TV show is supposed to show different points of view. So maybe we'll get to see how he is, just judging from the pictures we're seeing. Mm-hmm. He's actually in some of the earlier scenes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Running around with Juliet, no less.
So yeah.
This could be quite tasty.
Yes. Yes. So maybe that'll give us a sense of what Matthew, I mean, you are who you hang around with, right? So
and admittedly, he hung out with Domenico for quite a number of years, along with Luisa back in the hellraising Venetian days. So while he brought that up, and he also brought up how he and Juliet were stalking those girls in Rome. So he's, even all the way up through the 19th century, he was not what I'd necessarily call a safe guy to be around. Yeah.
Gentle or kind. No.
No. So,
but as far as Kit goes, I have to say on my first read, I wasn't coming from the place of empathy or thinking as deeply as we are now. I thought he was a character in the book, and I thought he was a damn funny, snarky one. I liked all of his. I'm like, okay, this guy is a nice change from the smooth, you know, let's all be nice. And let's, and I said it one of the last episodes, he popped Diana's bubble, and
As long as you're not the target of his snark, it's fun to be around a bitter bitchy queen.
Yeah.
Because they say some of the things that you just think.
Yeah. And everyone gives it right back to him, but he still comes up swinging.
Oh, yeah. It does not deter him. And one of the things I hope we see if we get to season two is in this chapter, Diana makes comments about how they always start the banter that goes on. And I want to actually hear the banter, not just saying, oh, yeah, well, they had a lot of witty banter.
Right.
It's like, show me. Don't tell me.
Yeah.
Shame on you, Deb. You should have written more witty banter. No filter today, people. So listeners, bygones.
All right. So Wendy, the defense rests their case. And we shall move on. So you
can drive back out of the ditch. Okay. That was an early trip into recording.
It's not like we were talking about Philadelphia Eagles and New England Patriots. We were actually talking about the book.
Julius Edelman will come up some other time.
Right. All right. So let's get into the text of this story, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
Yes, we shall.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So when we left off, Matthew and Diana were contemplating his friendship with the School of Night and what they wouldn't do for Matthew. Well, Matthew says, pray to God we never find out. And then we begin in chapter 3 with Diana tucked into Matthew's office between Pierre's room and a room used for estate business, while the lads were in the other room working on Diana's lavish backstory. And that story was
lavish, no less.
It was pretty much fantastic. Yeah. I think
in the old fashioned sense of the word, as in fantasy, not as in this is really good. Yeah. It's more back to the Dominique Devereaux thing. It was like something straight out of Elizabethan dynasty. Or an Elizabethan telenovela.
Yeah. She did say melodramatic in the extreme. Even she thought that.
It involved dead French parents, a nobleman.
But you know what I liked above all of this? Like they sprinkled in all these details, and then Matthew's fortuitous rescue in instantaneous regard. So he's always the star in this, no matter what, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, she was everything from the orphan to the virginal victim to the widow taken advantage of by opportunistic, I don't know, charlatans.
Yep.
Yeah.
The lechers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. The lechers and charlatans. conversions. And, well, who knows? Walter could have been one of those lecturers.
The conversion from Catholicism to Calvinism, which was supposed to explain away her exile in England. Okay.
Calvinism reminds me of Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm. All right. So she's practicing her handwriting and destroying her pens.
Yes.
Again, this is another attempt to blend into the times, as Matthew does so easily, because he's been here before. And she's testing out all of her names. And this kind of reminded me of, like, you know, when you're in school and you have a crush on a dude and you're like, Mrs. Yeah. Right. Mrs. Valerie Heartthrob, you know.
Valerie Kilmer.
That's what it reminded me of, but I'm just, I don't know. I think she was just trying to blend, trying to get her handwriting down, trying to do everything just to fit in.
Well, do you know what I thought was funny is when he's like, the reason you're having such a hard time is you're holding on to the pen too tight. And I'm also thinking, well, she's also holding on to Diana Bishop too tight.
Right.
Because think about it. I mean, it's almost allegorical. It's like you can't write your new name and you're not sure of your new identity and your commonplace book is turning into a big fat mess. And it's all because you're hanging on too tight.
Mm-hmm. Where she's trying to memorize all the little details of her new life when she should just live her new life.
Yeah.
I felt that's what Matthew was trying to tell her when he's like, you know, you don't need to do all this. And as an aside to the audience, what she's writing is contained in her commonplace book. You know, that little pamphlet that we give out. And I don't know how many of you out there have a copy of this, but there's not much to it.
No.
And there's lots of blank pages that you can technically put your own stuff in. And well, personally, I kind of use it for an autograph book now. Which is kind of cool.
It's like a little, it's like the size of a passport. And that's what yours looks like now, Gene, a passport with the different signatures in it, which is cool.
Oh, the stamps.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. With the different all-souls signatures in it.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
So Matthew and Walter were arguing outside, and then she comments on all the mail coming in.
I want to know what they were arguing about.
I don't know. Any guesses?
We always see Walter as Matthew's equal. So I probably, he's like, are you sure you should be doing this? He probably was like, what would Hamish be saying? He, you know, making sure that he's being reasonable and that he really wants to go through with all of this. I mean, you know, I think he's like, probably like, I'm on board with you, but let's lay this out and make sure that this is what we should be doing. Let's be on the same page.
Right. Do you think they were talking about Queen's business?
That's what I thought with this read. Because I was along with Angela in the past, every other reread is like, okay, fine, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's just saying, Matt, what the fuck are you doing? But yeah, mm-hmm. I know. I owe you $3 already. This time, there's a little, the way Diana says something about it seemed like the mail set off this particular round. Now I'm kind of wondering what old Fox and Elizabeth have those two up to.
Do you think we'll ever get that story?
No.
Well, I haven't gone through Google and see if I can tease out anything that was going on in October of November in 1590 in England. So
yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, later on, we'll think about the glyph Jupiter and that was supposed to be a big egg.
Yeah.
But I mean, that had nothing to do with Walter. So I think Matthew has something completely different going on aside from Walter.
Well, it wasn't the glyph with the Jupiter glyph with the ring was actually, he was the mysterious spy that Bruno was corresponding with.
Correct.
Too. So I don't know if something he got from Bruno in the mail that something was going on or what.
So that's why I didn't think that conversation had to do with the Queen's business. I mean, just because of all that going on.
Hmm.
Unless it had to do with, because Walter is the French, is he the French or the English Grandmaster?
English Grandmaster.
Okay, so maybe it had to do with Knight's business.
That's true, too.
But we didn't know it at the time.
Well, no, but
yeah.
Now we're looking back.
Yeah, we're looking back and, yep.
It may also actually tie into Knight's business and having to do with why old Matthew was meeting up with Gallaglass and Hancock in Chester.
Yep.
Because we never did find out what the heck was going on in Chester either.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe we will.
So since Matthew, you know, is a congregation member, maybe he's like, does this change our course of our business as knights now? Because you brought this witch back from wherever you brought her from?
That's interesting. It could be. It could be any of those things.
There's a lot of things it could be now that we sit and talk about. Readers!
What do you think?
Welcome to our home. What's your theory?
Because
God knows there's enough of them now.
Then they go on to talk about Diana leaving a mark in this place, and they discuss the chess piece that wound up in Sophie's hands. And Matthew remarks on observing how he noticed how Kit won this time. So this time he's observing, and before he was just living his life. But okay, so Time loop stuff again.
Here's the thing that I thought was interesting.
Okay.
Kit won the queen with a distraction involving the rook.
Okay.
Baldwin was the rook in the final plan in Book of Life when they were the other code names. He was the rook when they were going to rescue Matthew.
Yeah. Huh.
I wonder if there's a connection to be made there.
Are you saying Baldwin?
Somehow.
Baldwin was the expected, right? In the Book of Life. So he was the distraction. And then Diana was the KO, the knockout.
Yeah.
The queen.
I wonder if that's... I think there's foreshadowing there.
That's just too much.
What do you think, Klaus?
What time is it again? Everyone take a drink of your coffee.
Or wine. Yeah. Wine. It's time for some wine. Maybe really, but it's time for some wine. Sorry. My brain's spinning again. Oh, gosh. Before we get any further, we already got ahead of my little tidbit I found out.
Oh, yes.
When Diana was talking about her handwriting and how horrible it was, she makes a passing reference to Catherine Boyle, the sister of Robert Boyle, the scientist. And it's a little path we never went down before. Catherine's very interesting in her own right. She's a 17th century Mary Sidney. She was very involved in Robert's circle of friends. She knew a lot of experimenters and natural philosophers and helped her brother with his development of chemistry. But the most interesting thing I thought was there was a circle known as the Invisible School, kind of like the School of Night, where all these scientists met and talked, and she would host them at their house. And the other interesting thing about the Invisible School is that it was a precursor for the Royal Society.
Wow.
So
interesting.
That's what I found out about Lady Ranelagh, which was her title. She was also known as Catherine Jones, and she had a very unhappy marriage, apparently.
Hmm.
But she was very influential with a circle of very bright men.
Names are important. So there you go.
Yeah. It's always worth it to run down these rabbit holes.
I almost feel like every other paragraph in Shadow of Night is not only a rabbit hole, but it's an egg of some sort.
Yeah.
Or either mini or...
And for someone who doesn't write outlines.
Right.
When she's planning her books.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it organically flows out of her when she's writing these things.
Yeah.
Where all the little facts and knowledge and tidbits that she has floating around in her head just winds up in the manuscript.
It's what's so funny is as we tear these things apart, I kind of feel like Matthew. When Matthew was talking about how Diana wrote about his friends like she knew them.
Yeah.
I mean, the right. way that Deb throws all these references so casually in is kind of like she knew them all, too.
Yeah. Right. I like those little insertions.
Yeah. The parallels between Catherine Boyle and Diana's position right now in 1590 in the School of Night, she's kind of in an analogous position as far as being a bright intellectual woman dropped into the circle of intellectual giants of their time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's your egg for the day.
Ta-da!
I love the insertions, though, that she has because Deb's a historian, obviously, and Diana's a historian, and yet she's going back in time. But one of my favorite quotes is, "My experiences thus far had me planning to throttle the first Tudor historian I met upon my return for gross dereliction of duty." So it's like, how can Deb know? Like, it's weird. That's one of those circle things, too. But like, Deb is picturing what Diana would want to do, but yet she's never can never do it because she's never time walked herself. But I think that's just a stroke of brilliance. Or has she? Right. Well, I do maintain she's an alien, so. But I also think the Founding Fathers are aliens, so.
Right. Yes. So, Diana, actually, Matthew goes on to say about the chess piece, because Diana's all freaked out. It's like, I don't think we should let Kit have that. But Matthew says in this quote, "All the more reason not to worry. As long as it pains him to look at the likeness of Diana, he won't be able to part with it. Christopher Marlowe is a masochist of the First Order."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's...
Does that make Matthew a sadist?
Perhaps. Perhaps.
Just throwing that out there for further pondering.
Mm. So, Angela, when you were talking about going back to throttle the historians and stuff, where Diana was like, "I'm going to go throttle these people."
Right.
And she was referring to the colors like goose turd green and rat hair. And
yes, yes.
Yes.
Rat hair.
Oh. Rat hair, yeah.
I mean, it's so much better than Pantone 730. too. Mm. That's what they call colors now. It's like half of them don't have names. It's like Pantone 732.
Yeah. I was looking at colors for our hall bathroom because we're tearing that apart. And there was a color called Magma. I'm like, Magma? And there was a number attached to it and it was patented. I'm like, can you patent a color, really?
Yes, you can.
Wow.
You can copyright colors.
I would think so. With everyone, like Jeff Lewis has his own line. And I mean, all these designers are having their own line. I would think that you could patent a color.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a certain, especially if it's a certain blend.
It's like, what?
There was a big announcement. They discovered a new...
The darkest black?
No, it was a blue, and it had something to do with a new synthetic pigment they formulated, I think.
Yeah, I could see that.
And it was like darker than royal, but not quite navy.
Huh.
I mean, think about it. You don't think Tiffany hasn't patented their color?
Oh, yeah. The robin's egg?
No, it's Tiffany blue.
Yeah, Tiffany blue.
Yeah, it's like two shades off of robin's egg. Okay, Tiffany.
Well, and the big blue oval, that blue... The Ford blue is trademarked.
Yeah.
That color blue?
And
wow.
Yes, that color blue is trademarked. And I think the color of blue for the Lions jersey, which is called Honolulu blue, is also trademarked.
Wow.
Because it's kind of a funky blue. Blue seems to be trademarked an awful lot.
Yeah, we chose this shade of Hail Navy, and it's a Benjamin Moore exclusive. And then we went to Lowe's to try to save money, and they're like,
of course.
Oh, we can't duplicate this color. This particular one. I'm like, what?
Can they come close?
It's a licensed color.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. So I have to pay the $5 a gallon for Hail Navy.
At least it's only the hall bathroom.
Yeah.
The whole house.
Anyway, back out of the ditch.
We're going to go off-roading today, people. So just hang on.
We're in the Land Rover. We're not even in the Tesla, right? We're in the Land Rover. Because we roll like that.
Yeah,
Tesla's a useless.
So the caudals, I wanted to make a note of this. The caudals, they sound awful.
They sound like custard. Mm-hmm.
Now with the wine
like
in it.
Like a savory custard.
Ew. Egg and wine, and she describes them.
And saffron?
Yeah, yeah. Saffron. The saffron is what made it too revolting.
Yeah, I was like that.
I mean, a little saffron is good. Probably too much saffron is not good.
And the texture she described. Yeah. Whoa. I'm supposed to eat this to make myself feel better? No thanks.
But Tom slurped it down.
Then Summers and Bidwell show up to take her measurements, and Matthew doesn't know about this.
Oh, was this before or after Francois brought down all of the Louisa clothes from the attic and they had the...
This is before.
Discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is before. Summers and Bidwell show up. Matthew's all agitated. Again, something out of his control. People make decisions independently of him. That's what seems to trigger him.
Matthew's got a lot of triggers, but go on.
Oh, then they make up the story about clothing being lost in travel, including shoes, and Bidwell's noticing that Diana is maybe a warm blood. And I feel like everybody knows there's a creature in their midst. You know, I feel like the rumor mill is just going around this place.
A new creature, an unknown creature in their midst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They all kind of low key knew what Matthew actually was.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like we're used to that kind of crazy. Now you got a new kind of crazy going on here?
Wait a minute here. It's like dogs and cats sleeping together. What next?
What? It's like, okay, brace ourselves. And the suggestions of the popular colors of the time, and the guy automatically assumed that Diana's going to be in court. So he's like, oh, you know, this is popular with this stamp, and Matthew snaps,
silver.
She's not going to be in court. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Why not? Damn.
Yeah, that was...
I don't know. I think on first read, I was like, God, Matthew is all, what's his problem? Like the beginning of Discovery of Witches is like, what is this dude's problem?
Yeah.
Well, I kept thinking, way to be discreet, dude. Now they're going to go run around all over the village going, well, not only is there this woman there, he's like bound and determined to keep her hidden from the queen. What the hell's going on there?
Yeah. And then we see how a fever could be feared in this day and age. And the ague is brought up once again.
Mm-hmm. Hey, the vector of death.
Right.
as Professor Campanella brought up at the con when he was talking about miasmas and ague and, like I said, the vector of death.
Right. When the one girl took ill and they're like, oh, is she feeling better? It's like, oh, no, they buried her 3 days ago. And it's like, whoa. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then Matthew tells her she's too worried because she's like, I need clothes, Matthew. I need this. I need to fit in. Matthew tells her that she's worrying too much about fitting in, making this her life now, like we were talking about earlier. And then he brought up an Oxford Viva. And I wanted to ask you guys, is it like Viva Voce? Or oral exam, is that, is I always assumed it was that. I'm asking you guys.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay. I was like,
they can't just say oral exam at Oxford because right. that's too commonplace.
Right. I know that some of the courses I took while I was in school, they called it Viva Voce.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're trying to be fancy. It's just an oral exam. So when he said Oxford Viva, I'm like, I'm assuming it's that. But now that I have you two to throw this against, I'm just going to ask. Oxford Viva is an oral exam. That's what we're assuming, right?
Right. Okay. Yes.
Now, about fitting in, I think what Matthew said was true. When you first show up on the scene, like, I'd be at a new job or a new person in class or neighborhood, human nature makes the new, you know, makes it so the new guy is the curiosity.
Yeah, it's try too hard.
Right. And at my work, we call this the FNG, the fucking new guy, you know?
Perfect.
Right, right. Perfect. But after a while, the FNG becomes part of the tapestry, and then we stop fixating on that one person. So I feel like Matthew was correct right there when he's saying, you know, quit worrying, Diana. In a week, they're not even going to worry about you.
And she's always wanted to be someone other than herself, whether it's present day or 1590.
Yeah.
She just refuses to be Diana Bishop or Diana DeClaremont or Diana Royden.
I don't know. The whole concept of Matthew giving all this advice is just kind of ironic to me, because first he's like, you're holding on to things too tight. It's like, dude, you are the champion of holding on to things too tight. So yeah, pot me kettle. Mm-hmm. And now he's like, oh, you need to just relax and go with the flow and don't be the FNG.
Don't be the FNG. Or if you are the FNG, don't worry about it. And in a week it'll pass. No one's going to pay attention to you anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, I was going to say, in this whole other thing about, they have that fun little conversation with Francois about the clothes she's bringing down and how they're 1530 style. And he makes the crack about how Louisa married the 80-year-old guy with all the, with the huge inheritance in that dress. But there's a point to all this. They talked about how they had to cut down the clothes because Diana was less statuesque than Louisa. Mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute. How big was Louisa if everybody's running around making the comment about how Diana's a giantess? That's what struck me. I'm like, well.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the meaning of statuesque is different than what we're interpreting.
Or are we talking about her figure being more va-va-voom?
Perhaps.
Yeah. And Diana is more masculine, according
more
to Kit. She's got the masculine stride, as he pointed out to her.
Yeah.
Good
she's
point.
More athletic, so perhaps that wasn't admired during those times, because I would think an athletic figure would be somebody who actually labors.
Right.
Versus...
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Versus somebody who is pretty much a pampered pooch.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose if we look at all of Rudolph's paintings of his mistress and whatnot, they are rather on the voluptuous side.
Yes.
As opposed to lean and mean and hunting the stag.
Right.
Yep.
And then she notes the dynamics of the school of night. Like, Kit, Walter, and Matthew dominated the conversation with history and geography. Tom and George were able to chip in. And Henry, due to his deafness, he deferred to everybody else. So she's watching Henry defer. I feel like she's almost like her parents, an anthropologist, you know, where she's just observing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And she's noticing she can see auras now.
Yeah. And then they notice that Matthew notices that it's different. I mean, she talks about all of a sudden her third eye opened up and it kicked in. And
yes.
And the strands of time.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if something happened back in Madison.
What do you mean?
Could the strands of time been calling her, because that's when the blasted tree actually totally grew up through the fireplace? Because that's like, what, 2 or 3 days later?
Yeah.
That maybe her third eye opened up.
The seed was planted when they left, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if it totally came to fruition in that period of time.
Or maybe it was taken root.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what the other thing is that's interesting about that? If you think about it, that blasted tree replaced the oak that she sucked the life out of.
That's true.
Oh,
in the Grove.
Well, look at you.
It's true. I mean, especially to save Matthew.
Yeah.
I mean, with the blood and everything.
And that tree ends up being their way home because she grabs onto the root to find their way back through time.
Right.
Or forward through time.
So as you brought up, Matthew's all commenting on her magic changing. And he comments that we need to find a witch. Because at this point, Matthew's in charge and Diana doesn't really have a way to counter him because he knows the times and she doesn't. And so I guess Matthew's going to find a witch. And that brings us to chapter 4.
Well, here's my other question.
Okay.
He says her scent changed, but he never says how. Or does he?
No. I noticed which your makes scent me curious. Has changed. Yeah.
And for all his talk about how everybody smells and this and that, Deb never tells us how her scent changed.
Right.
Could that be her transitioning over to from starting to make the change from maiden to mother?
Maybe. I mean, her
just
hair.
Just a question.
Yeah, everything's starting to metamorphose, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. Angela, you said you had something.
Yeah, just something quick, because she does say today is the Feast of All Souls and it's November 2nd. Your continuity issue in the last episode had to do with that, and I just noticed that she did say November 2nd, All Souls.
Mm-hmm.
So that's correct.
So it was right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's right in that paragraph.
Right.
Like, you know, as we found out about the blood type.
Your mileage may vary.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so chapter 4.
Yes.
And they all start searching for a witch. Diana notes that none of them, probably not consciously, held a lot of regard for women or anyone who lacked a university education.
Mm-hmm.
After all the various suggestions that Matthew vetoes, he calls on Widow Beaton. And she notes that she was exactly the type of woman that the School of Night scorned. But her being poor and female will ensure her cooperation. She was the only witch in the local area because most of them fled rather than being close to a vampire, a.k.a. where.
Well, wasn't there also the whole thing that so many of the male witches decided to go to university and dabble in alchemy instead of just being witches as well? So you've got that gender split going on as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, the women became kitchen brewers.
Yeah.
The men were
scientists
going over.
That was an interesting article the other day. I think we posted it on Twitter, but how through history we read about things. And as soon as you hear witch, it's a bad connotation. As soon as you hear wizard, it's this glorious, magical, powerful man who has all the powers in the world. But you hear witch and you think, oh, really? It's associated with the devil. So it's just interesting that
wizard, you get Merlin, witch, you get hag.
Even
you get the three witches of Cawdor from Macbeth.
Yeah.
Even though the word wizard connotates a wise man.
Yes.
So thanks, society.
Way to go.
I love how Diana says Widow Beaton is straight out of Central Casting.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yes. I always, when I first read that, I pictured the disguise from that the evil queen whipped up in
Snow White
when she went to give Snow White the apple.
Yes.
I mean, complete with the wart on the nose and the stooped back and the hooked nose.
Well, here's what I noticed, right? Pierre announces that she's arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of leave her sitting there.
I know.
Like, you're going to get the door?
It's not going to end well. It's like, way to piss people off.
I mean, they leave her sitting there while they're fussing with Diana's clothes. They're fussing with everything. Matthew and gang, they don't pay attention to the problems of witches. And Diana's a historian and she knows how it goes over history and the patterns of human behavior. And he argues that he lived through history. So whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm siding with Diana on this one.
I was too. In this read, I'm like, geez, Matthew, you are kind of jerky.
And she's kind of like, way to go, guys. You know, this is not getting us off on the best foot here.
Right.
Why would she want to help any of us? You guys are treating her like crap.
Right.
Yeah, right off the bat, he's got a total they all have a total disregard for her. Like, let her wait. Who cares?
Right. Because Matthew's totally looking at this like an Elizabethan man. It's just she's just out in the front waiting. Meanwhile, they're all hanging around. So they have this argument and he's trying to calm her down by getting all amorous and lovey-dovey. And she's like, I'm not in the mood.
Right.
Oh, my God. That bit of sexual tension was just annoying. God, it's like, why?
I know.
It's like, okay, I'm going to soothe her with my magic penis or something.
Right.
You know, we'll calm her down here. We'll just calm her down. It's like, Yeah, no. And then it doesn't work that way.
And then she's like, I'm not in the mood. And he's like, well, I'm going downstairs. Someone will keep me company. I'm like,
yeah. Well, and then what was it? They were accusing her of being Spanish, which I thought was kind of like, wow, there's an insult.
Yeah. So now this quote right here, I think this is the quote that set every modern woman reading this Shadow of Night for the first time. And if you really want to behave like an Elizabethan woman, stop questioning me, he said roughly, and he departed.
Wow, that was like, ooh, somebody's not getting any for a long time.
Right.
I don't know how if I took exception to that the very first time, but this time around, I took exception to the word behave. Like, you don't tell me to behave anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm not a child. I'm, you know, act would be different or carry on, but not behave.
How dare you?
Behave is dismissive. It's, yes. Behave is like probably the most dismissive of the synonyms you could have picked.
Right. So after that little argument, the next day, Beaton arrives. This is where they just leave her hanging out. You know, they're all worried about her height and her speech. And like you said, Jean, they mistook her for Spanish. Some people in the neighborhood.
Her French was as bad as mine, probably.
I remember editing an episode where you're like, my French is abysmal.
That's my disclaimer.
I just love the way you said it. My French is abysmal. By gods. Right.
Which, by the way, mini French lesson, Francois is the male name. Françoise is the woman's name. So when we say Françoise, we're talking about the woman.
Françoise with the S sound on the N or S or Z, depending on how hard you say it.
Yes.
Françoise. I'm going to have to remember that, Françoise, for the picky people out there.
Yes. Or just let it be known. We know what we're talking about. If we say Francois, then you already have to.
Just blame Jean.
My French is abysmal.
Stick that as a disclaimer on every one of these episodes.
That's right.
The devil is not in the French details.
Nope.
Yeah.
So they just go on to fuss with each other. Meanwhile, Beaton is sitting there waiting to be greeted. They go to chide Kit about all the people he owes money to around the town, like the printer and the tailor and his landlord.
Well, and they chided him because he was talking about putting the chess piece in hock to pay his bills. And that Matthew's like, no.
And Diana's like, no.
But you know what? No. I'm a believer in fate. I'm like, maybe that's how it was. I know it's not how it's supposed to end up. I know that. But they don't know that. So what's the difference if it ended up in hock and then made its way through wherever?
Yeah.
I don't see what the big deal was.
Or he got it out of hock.
Yeah.
Because he wanted it back because it was something for Matt after he disappeared.
Yeah. I mean, as long as he didn't throw it into the fire or smash it or melt it down. I mean, what's the big deal how it exchanged hands?
We're talking about two control freaks, though.
Yeah. All I kept thinking is the picture that came up in my mind when she was like, no, don't put it in hot, pawn it.
Right.
It was the scene towards the end of Risky Business when that stupid glass egg is falling off the fireplace.
Oh, yeah.
And Joel tries to pick it and he's going, no.
Yeah.
And after all that, the mom notices there's a crack in my egg.
Yes.
I'm like, what the fuck? Yes. After everything they've been through.
I know. And that's as ridiculous as it is. That's what popped up in my mind. There's your 80s movies reference for this episode, people.
And that's right, millennials. A link will be in the show notes. Awesome movie. You should watch it.
Yeah.
Might be on Netflix. I don't know.
That's the one Tom Cruise movie I really like. Fuck Princeton. U of I all the way.
So Matthew steps in to try to calm Diana down and says, you know, kid, I'll pay for all of your bullshit. So he doesn't have to hawk the chess piece. And then she thinks on how her magic has changed and how she sucked the life out of a quince. And what'd you guys think of that?
Oh, and the flowers. When she was arranging the flowers.
Yeah.
You know, this is the first time this idea started to coalesce. But I'm almost wondering if the whole drawing of the way she's been drawing life force out of everything is kind of of her way of preparing for pregnancy, because it's three times that's happened now. I mean, it happened with Matthew, which I think the goddess had a hand in, and now she's kind of learning to do it on her own. Or not learning, but she's somehow doing it on her own, and I almost wonder if it's a way of her make that transition to mother.
I don't know. It could be. Or it could be just something simple. Hey, once you've done something once, it becomes easier each time.
Right.
You know? Maybe she just broke that gap.
Well, and then it's the whole crossroads thing, too, because down the line, she brings forth the chicken from the egg. You know, the whole giving life and taking life thing.
Yeah.
Right.
So. Yeah. And the white stag that shows up outdoors in the gardens when she goes for her walk. At this point, when I first read this, I'm like, oh, the white animals again.
And they're aplenty.
Yes.
Well, yeah. And then if you think about it, you've got the white owl and the white stag on the same grounds.
Yeah.
And at this point in time, it's like, okay, well, we also kind of know that Matthew wasn't living on stag's blood either, because he would have been culling them from his property. So I have to wonder if he culled the strain of white deer on the old lodge property over the years, after years following 1590.
And the convo about buying a beard from a wizard. And then Kit swipes at Diana once again, telling her she's not witch enough. And
yeah.
Okay, Kit, go outside.
But I totally related with that, because she says, I didn't understand what he meant. And then he went on with exaggerated impatience. I'm like, I feel you, Kit.
That's it. Oh, that might be it for you.
Yes.
Here's one other thing about that stag. Was the stag watching over Diana, or was the stag watching over Matthew? I mean, those forests around that part of England, there were also the myth of Herne the Hunter and the Horned God, who's embodied by the stag god, too. I mean, was that a guardian for Matthew that had already always been there? There's lots of...
I feel like there's roads we can take, but...
Sure.
We need more clues.
I don't feel... And I'd hate to assign thoughts to Deb, but I don't feel like she thought about this that much. I feel like she threw them out there as an air of mystery.
Yeah.
But this is just me.
I agree. But I will say this. I don't think the white stag that appears to Diana at the old lodge is the same white stag that comes up at the temple later on with her and Philippe. I think they're two separate creatures.
Oh, yeah. But a white stag would show up.
The white animals are definitely a motif through this whole thing.
Yes.
I would definitely agree with that. Yeah. And I think, you know, we're at the point where we're assigning meaning to things that Deb probably never gave two thoughts about.
Yeah.
But it's still fun.
It is still fun.
Agreed.
And then I'm going to take note that the dogs don't even like Kit.
No.
I think they're smart dogs. When your dogs don't like somebody, you really need to listen to them.
They
do know. It's scary.
Yeah.
The tailor, when he asked who is he in trouble with now, and we posted that a while ago, because there's a historian, John McCafferty, who posted on this day in 1592 that Kit actually, in real life, got in a street fight with his tailor.
So, yes, I remember that.
So this is just the beginnings of Kit being in trouble with tailors, because it really did happen. So I laughed on this read, knowing that happens.
Right. He's not making friends anywhere. I mean, even his landlord's about to kick him out, you know?
Right.
So what did we think about the cunning? Apparently they went and greeted her and brought her in. What did we think about the cunning woman, Widow Beaton?
I thought it was perfect. I mean, like Diana said, she was a straight out of, I didn't feel easy about any of it, because Matthew was protesting how easy it was going to go, how smooth it was going to go. And just the whole, something was brewing. Something was bound to happen.
Yeah.
And I wanted to so badly. I'm like, please, Diana, make this work. And it just, you know, meant to be.
Well, I think part of, Widow Beaton was kind of looking at her like, God, she's going to try and horn in on my territory.
Right.
Well, and the fact that she didn't like vampires, they didn't like her, it couldn't go well. I mean, it was just money was prevailing over everything, because she only decided to move forward with testing Diana when she weighed the amount of the weight of the sack.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. My thoughts on her, like, once she was described, and, you know, my cartoon habits in the beginning of my life, watching, you know, Broomhilda and Bugs Bunny, that's what I'm kind of picturing. you know. Yes.
But I like Brunhilde and her hairpins were great, and she actually had a sense of humor. Widow Beaton had no sense of humor.
Well, no. And, you know, Widow Beaton kind of had reason to.
She, you know what? She is what Sarah could have ended up like if Sarah surrendered to all of her bitterness.
True.
It's the road not taken with Sarah. Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you guys this specifically. Now, the bell, book, and candle ritual, and you know how many pagans use this in modern altars. Can you guys tell me the Roman Catholic history of this? Do you guys know? I mean, I know there's a movie out. I never watched it, but...
I know the bell, they ring the bell. I've got to remember.
It has to do with excommunication.
But also isn't there also during a point in time during the mass, they ring the bell when the host is exposed?
Yeah.
Or at least they used to, which is after the reading of the gospel? Because there's an order to it all, and it has to do with the reading of the gospel, the exposure of the host, is the ringing of the bell.
Okay, I wanted to make sure.
And I can't remember where the candle comes into it. The candles come into it, too. And there's always the candles when they process in at the beginning of the mass.
Right. Well, here, I mean, what little I could come up with when I was reading about this, and I was curious, and I wanted to throw it against you guys.
Well, and Vatican II screwed up a lot of that stuff, too. So.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, a mass is, I mean, laden with bells, books, and candles, but the bell, book, and candle, starting way back when, had to do with excommunication and literally casting someone out from the Catholic Church if you were charged with committing an egregious sin.
Well, oh gosh. Yay, I can bring this up. not that it's historically accurate or anything, but in my binging of the Borgias, I just got through the episode where they excommunicated Savonarola.
Oh.
And what was so interesting about it is that you've got Roderigo flipping through all these books looking for the spell to cast him into the pits of hell. And he used the word spell.
Oh, and it was okay.
The ceremony of excommunication the way they shot it in St. Peter's is you had I think it was like a circle. Circle of 12 of the cardinals, and each of them held candles.
Bishops.
Right.
Bishops, bishops of Rome, I guess.
Yeah.
And they, at the end of it all, they cast the candles down and the candles broke in half. I don't know if that was a Hollywood, visual that they just came up with, or if that was somewhat historically accurate to the way the ceremony would have been done, but it made for some really pretty TV from an overhead shot, I'll tell you that.
Cool. I'd imagine.
Pretty much how Widow Beaton tells the story is pretty much how it was in the Catholic Church.
Oh, okay.
You know, the story where she says about the soul and closing the book means shutting them out. That's pretty much a literal translation.
So it's, witches were considered, how do you say that word? Anathema?
Yes.
Anathema to the church.
So, I mean, how she explains it in the story is the ritual is performed where the priest rings the bell, the book is closed, and the candle is put out. Now, the witch ritual, even how Sarah described it, is pretty much the opposite. You have to stop the bell ringing, open the book, and light the candle. So I thought that was an interesting contrast, but I wanted to make sure that I wasn't totally off with the Catholic ritual versus the pagan ritual. And are they related?
They're always related.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Widow Beaton does explain the same thing as she was preparing the ritual. And Diana can't do any of these things. And then Beaton's like, she's got no power. Eh. And it felt like she was purposely baiting Diana. I don't know if I'm the only one there.
Oh, I agree with you. And I also think not only was she baiting Diana, I think she was purposefully lying to the rest of the room.
She was.
Yeah.
She was.
Because Diana takes the bait. Grabs the fruit to prove her wrong, and all of a sudden she had an internal drive to prove herself a witch when prior she hid herself from being a witch. She hid herself from everybody. So I felt this was kind of a big change in her.
Yeah, talk about bad timing.
Yeah.
Right.
Good Lord.
Now you want to claim
what
you're a witch?
Thinking?
Now?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. This all reminded me, though, of Don't Go Outside at Septuor, and then she gets taken away by Satu. And Matthew's like, just stay quiet. She's like, nope.
Nope. Yeah, it's like, all the notes. Here I go.
And then her hands are sparking all over the place, and Matthew grabs her to relax because she's clearly agitated. And she's confessing that she can taste sunlight. I mean, all in front of Widow Beaton. Just shut up, Diana.
Oh, man. And she's like spewing her business all over the street in front of all of them. I know. And I'm sure Walter's like, what the hell has he gotten us into? This is a sideshow.
I know. And then Beaton's like, she's bewitched a vampire. Or where? She's bewitched him. Oh my God. This is the devil's work. And then this made me think. I always took it as her trying to outwardly fit in by the, this is Widow Beaton, following the construct of Christianity.
Yeah.
Because as I say, ask any person who considers themselves, you know, a quote unquote witch, there's no devil or hell in practicing, you know, the craft.
Yes, yes.
It's all energy and intention. But reading this, I found myself like questioning my prior assertion.
Right.
She says there's evil in the house. And yesterday, Mr. Danforth preached to the congregation about the danger of letting it take root.
I think part of it is, too, is she wants to try and separate herself. You know, they're saying, oh, witches are evil and witches are with the devil, with all the Matthew Hopkins and the Cotton Mathers of the world coming up and the Calvinism. I think she's trying to make a niche for herself. It's like, well, I renounce the devil, but here's your potion out the back door.
Absolutely. I think it's a total deflection move. She says, I'm just a healer who can help, has extensive knowledge of herbs. But she knows all those other powers exist. She will never admit it. And she doesn't even want to find it in Diana. She's like, nope, she's not powerful. I don't even know what you're talking about. Because
she's dissembling.
She would have to have knowledge of it to recognize it. So here then she starts the whole Christian devil and evil and sermon and, you know.
Arm waving.
Yeah, exactly.
Blah, blah, blah. Right, yeah, yeah. Right. But afterwards, you know, after I'm questioning my original assertion, she's all like, I don't want any trouble. You know, I don't have the setup you've got. You've got noblemen and vampires protecting you. And I don't have that, you know.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like her hand was out figuratively, like, is there another bag here somewhere?
Yeah. And it's like, I don't have your protections, lady, and don't drag me into your mess. I don't know anything about this unless you pay me more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. I know when I first read this, I'm just like, what the hell is going on? But now that I'm picking it apart, it kind of makes sense with the times. Yeah. And it kind of reminded me of my grandmother, where she would go to church.
Right. Just appear in the community like you're towing the line and you're not different. I'm not different from anyone else. Look at it. I'm here.
I'm just trying to assimilate, you know. Meanwhile, go to her kitchen.
Build a clientele.
And then she leaves with the parting words. Hey, everyone knows who the fuck you are.
Right. Cheers.
Well, and she kind of gets a parting shot, too, you know, about to Matthew.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
I don't like you anyways.
And add a witch. Watch it. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Right.
Now you're hanging out with a witch. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like she was old school that way. I don't want to be part of your mess. Drag me into this. And then she leaves and the house goes into chaos. And Kit, of all people, he's like, I love that. That was awesome.
I love that.
Oh my God.
I did it like, yes. He's like, I told you. I was like, I, for one, was thoroughly entertained. And I'm like, I don't know. I love it.
I know. I think I'm going to use her in my new play.
And that's what I love about it, too. It's an explanation of how he got what he got in his future plays.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It was just brilliant. Yeah. And in that moment, I really liked him. I'm like, all right, you kind of diffuse the situation too. Actually, I think that kind of like broke the tension in a way, because he was just being his self-absorbed self. It's like, hey, I got some new material.
Right.
Plus, he's a drama queen, so you know he loves that shit.
Well, and he's not tripping over what he's saying to please Matthew, which I like.
Yeah. What was this quote? I enjoyed myself immensely.
Yes.
That hag is perfect for one of my plays.
And I could just see like George smacking himself in the forehead.
Oh my God,
oh no,
what a mess.
This is just not gonna end well.
Tom all of a sudden, you know, starts looking out the window at the sky for stars. He's like, I'm not even here right now. I don't even know what's going on.
I'm totally disengaging. This is a stupid question that as I read this chapter last night, it's like, so are all these guys like staying at the old lodge, or are they staying someplace themselves and coming over every morning to like reload or what?
I feel like they got a place to lay their heads, but yeah. When they get up, let's head over to Matthew's place because, you know, there's always food cooking. He's always got wine and brew. I feel like the old lodge was the hangout place, but I that's my opinion though.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think they have a place. Well, other than, look, even Kit has a place to stay, even though he's in trouble with the landlord. He's always there.
That's true because he's not paying his bills. Good point. Good point.
But I mean, a couple chapters ago, they even woke them up, you know, parted the bed curtains. And by the way, we were just talking downstairs. We haven't gone to bed yet. Now we have a question. So we're going to wake you up.
Yeah. That's why I was kind of like, well, are they staying there or not?
I'm sure he has places for them to crash.
Yeah.
But I do think, I don't know. It's just, I feel like they have other residences about town, but they're probably little bachelor rooms or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I guess the other reason the question came up because is all I could think of were all like the when the queen went on her summer procession and how everybody like basically rebuild their manor homes to host people. That's why I'm kind of like, well, is Matthew hosting his friends at the house since there's such a premium placed on the ability to be a hospitable host and, you know, the level of hospitality you can extend. So I'm like, well, is the fact that he's not giving them a place to sleep somehow indicative that he's lacking in the hospitality department, or are they staying there? We just never really addressed it.
And I feel like, you know, Matthew was the one with all the cash.
Right.
And
well, duh.
So, I mean, as long as they're associated with Matthew, it was all about networking and who you were associated with.
Well, and I think Henry's mother still kind of held the purse strings, even though he had the title.
Right.
Yeah.
Walter wants to know what's going on. And Matthew steps in. Hey, don't question my wife. Then he turns around and questions his wife.
<You know? laughs> There you go. Wait, I've got this.
Right. He's all like, I need to speak to my wife alone. And so Diana's like, oh, I'm your wife again. Okay. Right. It's not a good time for Matthew and Diana. No.
I love though that Francoise is on her side though. She's got like a little ally.
Yeah.
Because he's like, put her hair this way. And he has to be like this. She's like, you have no idea what it requires.
Right. And she smacks him.
Yeah.
Get out of here. You don't know what you're talking about.
Just take that testosterone and get out of here. It's making you stupid.
She's like a precursor to Mart.
Yeah. And then of all...
Without the affection.
Yes. Right. And then after all this chaos, I love that Hal is all like, don't worry, Matt. It's okay. If she speaks out against you, we'll defend you. Or something like that. You know,
he's so sweet.
It's like, no. If anybody speaks against you or whatever, we're here.
Yeah.
And I just love that about him. It's just like...
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, it just in those two words, you realize, wait a minute. This guy, sweet-faced Hal, has got more power in his pinky at the end of the day than even Matthew and them when it comes to being in that place in that time.
Yeah.
And historically speaking, he's got no reason to be so cheery and optimistic. I mean, having ancestors killed in battles and...
Right.
Oh, yeah. And being a secret Catholic.
Right.
With a claim to the throne.
Yeah.
However extended it is. Yeah, no.
Right.
He's just a swell guy.
He is. We like Hal.
Swell.
We're going to end this chapter when Matt is like, we are creatures in a human world. There's always a reason for concern. And that ends this chapter discussion.
And I love how gravely it ends.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that does that. Hmm.
I know. Lots of things to think about. You know.
I love how we come up with more questions than answers.
It's like, huh. I want to think about that.
Maybe that's our new tagline. More questions than answers.
Yes.
Looking for answers? Sorry, we don't got those.
Yeah. Keep moving.
So you ready for housekeeping, guys?
Sure.
All right.
Yes.
Housekeeping!
From Fern, she says, hi guys, really thrilled to hear more from Dr. Shelley. As a bio major, a physical therapist, etc., I really love digging into the science and genetic aspects of the books. And then she said, I was wondering what the fandom thought of the pick for Isabeau. I was a bit thrown off for her being, and then she kind of pauses, not that I mind an older Isabeau, I'm just not sure how this will play out. Unless they get Jeremy Irons to play Philippe, I don't see the benefits to this. Yeah, we kind of covered that. In our episode with Shelley and Hopefully you heard that, but I'm in a wait and see mode.
And Deb does say Philippe and Isabeau never are going to be on screen together. I mean, at least in A Discovery of Witches and even Shadow of Night. So she said he's still pretty spry in 1590, so he doesn't have to be older.
Right. Well, we won't see him older, but then I don't know. I don't know how that's going to play out.
Yeah. Wait and see. Definitely wait and see. Wait and see if the initial explanations offered up drift by the wayside, too.
I don't think anyone really has a problem with the older actress, the fact that she's older. I think it's everybody's mourning their young vision of Isabeau.
Yes.
Well, I think people are mourning the change in canon,
They're going this route. And we're just going to hang on and watch and see how it plays out. I'm sure it'll be fine. And it's a different story not completely different. I don't remember who said this to me, but somebody said it's starting to look like A Discovery of Witches, or it should be tagged, not A Discovery of Witches. It should be tagged inspired by A Discovery of Witches.
that's fair.
Yeah, it is fair.
Based on
the books, Discovery of Witches.
But on the other hand, we're getting new characters. And we're getting more Domenico, and we're getting more backstory. So that's all good stuff.
That's good stuff. And so, you know, the Isabeau thing, I don't feel like anybody's really got a problem with her age. I just think we're mourning the young and glamorous Isabeau that we all had in our heads. Mm-hmm. That's all it is.
I wanted her to be impervious to everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to be the case. And then she goes on to say, hope you all had happy Halloweens, Fern. Thanks, Fern.
Thank you, Fern.
Who's next?
I've got a review. Okay. It's from iTunes.
Yay!
It's a Canadian review from Misky235.
Yay!
I just want to say how grateful I am for this podcast. Each of our hostesses bring passion, insight, wisdom, and most importantly, a demon's cheekiness. I've known this series for years, but I'm a new listener. This podcast will open your eyes to new insights and make you laugh. Best of all, it's like sitting down with nice bevies and having a chat with good friends. Thank you, Misky235.
Thank you.
We'd love to hear that.
All right. I have a review. Move the Scale from the USA is feeding my beast. And she says,
yes.
Demons, 5-star review. Demons Discuss allows me to keep living in my favorite world, that of Deb Harkness's All Souls trilogy. This is the only podcast I listen to that makes me want to join in the conversation. I should add, I don't always listen in order, and I don't find that it takes away from my listening pleasure. So thank you, Move the Scale.
Thank you, Move the Scale. That's great.
I know. You all are keeping Angela alive.
I know. And thriving.
I live for these reviews.
Yay! All right, so let's move on to Save It for the Show.
Save it for the show.
Save it for the show.
Guys, save it for the show.
Ready?
Ready.
Yep, we're ready.
All right, the title of this Save It for the Show. New fandom entities cropping up with their sometimes indistinguishable features. Go.
from the names to the avatars.
Yeah, so you said it all.
To the content. I mean, like you said, it's indistinguishable. It feels like a round robin of let's retweet or let's repost whatever Deb puts up. I don't see a lot of original content. And I can't, honestly, with some of the naming conventions that they're using, it looks like spam bots.
Kind of looks like that when we're looking at our notifications, too.
Yeah, and I'm happy to see that there are other platforms out there, but I can't urge people strongly enough, find your own voice. We want to see all those weird little things that you somehow tie into the All Souls world. Everybody can go to get Teresa Palmer's Insta story. What's your spin on it? Does her Insta story inspire something? You know, do you see something in there that inspires you to go out and maybe pull some other photo or have some thought? We want to know that. We don't.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Pinterest, which I have not been dedicating a lot of time to lately, but there's like 9,000 boards called The Discovery of Witches on Pinterest. And actually, some of the reasons that I stopped doing it is because it takes a lot of effort and time on the part of the pinner to research and caption and find the correct picture. And it takes all of 1 second for someone to just reblog, reshare, repin said pin, original pin. So that kind of what reminds me of. And I echo your sentiment, Jean, like be original with your name, with even your content. I mean, I don't know. Or even if it's the picture that 10,000 other people have shared. Do you have an interesting opinion on it or something different to say about it? Or what's your perspective?
At least put a quote tweet on it. Put a quote tweet on it with your what it makes you think of. Something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're also big proponents of citing your sources. I think we say this like every time. Cite your sources.
Yes. Yes. I do want to mention, of the new fandom entities, Chamomile and Clove, they definitely have a different spin. That's another podcast out there. We'll put a link in the show notes. They have another spin on these discussions, and they look at it from a different point of view and maybe a different perspective. And
they bring themselves to it.
Yes.
They bring themselves to it, which is great.
Right.
I love that.
So shouts. Is it Jen and Kate? Shouts Jen and Kate.
Jen and Kate. Yeah. Well, and also what they've said, and it's so true. So it doesn't matter if, you're the 10th Discovery Witches Instagram profile, is that they say Jen and Kate actually said people come to it from a different place. So demons come to the books from a different place. They come to it from a different place. So that's what we're saying. Be yourself. Give your perspective on it.
Right.
I think that's good advice.
Show the place you're coming from.
Yes.
We're all going to the same place, which is the TV show and the books, but show us where you're coming from.
We're all looking at it through different lenses. And that's what makes it interesting when you visit the other fandom spots. It's like, oh, I'd like to see what lens these people see it through. And that's what makes it interesting. And that's what makes the experience more rich. I know there's one account out there that they just retweet. They just have a Twitter account. They don't have a website. They don't. I feel like that's not adding to the conversation. And I hate to say that, but they're really not. So, yeah, I'm going to be that asshole.
Find your voice. No. I mean, don't be afraid. Find your voice. Find your voice.
Right.
This isn't a matter of right or wrong. This is a matter of why do you love it? We all know we love it, but why do you love it? Show it to the rest of us.
Right. Right. Don't just post something because everybody else is posting it and you don't get it or whatever. It's like, everybody else is posting this, so I should post this too. What? Yeah. So, that's all I have to say. I don't know.
Yeah.
You guys have anything to add to that? That was a quick and short, sweet save it for the show.
Yeah. No, I was going to say watch out for imposters, but I just checked on that imposters account. Last time they posted was October 14th, so maybe they slowed the roll.
How did they think they were going to get away with that,
though? I'm surprised Deb hasn't totally gotten that shut down yet. But then again, Twitter's got problems of their own right now.
Yeah. Twitter has. Thanks.
Yeah.
Orange guy.
Well, suspending Orange guy's account and verifying Nazis and all manner of nonsense.
Right. All right. So we're going to take a break. And then after this, we'll do last thoughts and things we can't let go of. Angela, your favorite.
I know.
Find our podcast wherever it is you like to listen to your podcast shows. You can contact us directly by emailing us at demonsdiscuss@gmail.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail. Call us at 360-519-7836. Or you can reach us on SpeakPipe. And that is speakpipe.com/demonsdiscuss. Now, become a discusser. And how you do that is go to demonsdiscuss.com, scroll down, fill out the little short form, name, email address, fill out the code so we know you're not a spammer. Submit that and you'll be a discusser and we'll just get to discuss things. So do that. We embed a form on each and every one of the show notes so you can just fill that out too. That's an easy way to get a hold of us. And don't forget to visit our home base. That is demonsdomain.com. Everything we're doing, you'll find there, including our giveaways, our blog posts on the characters, on places. See everywhere Angela goes. Because she makes some trips, let me tell you. And we can't wait to hear from you. We'll see you on the internet.
My last thought is it's courtesy of Colleen Madden and a couple of her tweets that she sent out last night and early this morning. She was doing fashion illustrations for both of her projects, one of which being All Souls Trilogy and Playing with Color. And it just reminded me we need to get to our fashion episode.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, suggested by Kate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And seeing those beautiful sketches she did just reminded me we need to get on that. So that's my last thought for today.
I like it.
Cool. Angela?
No.
Okay. I'll come back to you. I'll ask after we're done. Okay.
All right.
So my last thought, I'm glad things are slowing down reference TV news. I mean, it's great seeing all the scenes, but I no longer feel the need to drop everything to soak in the TV stuff. Am I alone in this? I mean, I'm just kind of, it's settled in my head. The TV show is coming and I think I'm just resigned to it coming when it comes and we'll cover it all appropriately. But it's getting to a point where every time I open up social media, I have anticipation fatigue, if there's such a thing.
Yes, yes.
There is such a thing. Yes. Yeah. And over analysis fatigue as well.
Right.
I mean, I'm excited about a lot of things, but when you start speculating about what the dialogue's going to be in a scene, then it's like,
yeah, I'm just tired of thinking about it. It's just like, it'll come when it comes. And before I was all, oh my God, new casting. We have to drop and do a special episode. But if you've noticed, audience, we haven't been doing that lately because the same news is going out over social media. And if you're following us somewhat, and if you follow us on Demon's Domain on our social media, Twitter and Instagram and everything like that, and or anybody else, you'll pretty much get the same thing. So I don't think we need to do special episodes anymore.
We also like to let things set. Well, and the other nice thing is we've got the initial reaction was great with Matthew and Teresa because we were waiting for that for so long.
Yeah. Right.
But I enjoy letting us settle into it and get our thoughts together. And I think it's better for us and for our listeners that they get something coherent from us other than, oh my God, he's so cute. Oh my God. Oh my God. Right. Blah, 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 blah. Right.
It's also settling my nerves because that little schedule we were doing with all those special editions. Holy.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I do have a
swear jar. That was an ass kicking.
Oh my God. Yes. Yes. All right before the con too. It's like, we can chill. And there's a thing I can't let go of too. I'm so pleased that people are continuing to listen to us when we aren't so rah-rah about everything. And I feel like there's a time to be a cheerleader and there's a time to go, wait a minute, what? You know,
yeah.
I've always said that Deb is kind of a fan of her fans. And I wonder sometimes because of that, we all go out of our way to protect her too much. I mean, of course we admire and we champion her, but I think the whole we must not say anything bad is kind of tiring. So I think there's a way to promote healthy criticism. She's grown and she did put a story out there in the world. She doesn't always have good reviews, as you can see on Goodreads. So I think she's made of stronger stuff than what people are giving her credit or giving to her, assigning credit to her as far as that.
Where does not that kind of population. We're not sheeple, as we say, sheep plus people. So, I mean, we're nothing if not honest. And we don't go out of our way to slam anything, but we do give constructive criticism. And I'm not a robot. I have an opinion.
Yep.
Yeah. And it all comes from a place of love.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because if we didn't care enough, the opposite of love is indifference. And if we were so indifferent that we couldn't speak our mind about something that we thought didn't ring true or didn't make sense to us, that would be indifference. And that would not be respectful to the fandom. It would not be respectful to Deb or her work.
Right.
And it gives me comfort that I know that Deb Harkness or anyone else is not losing sleep over my opinion. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I feel free to express it.
Right. And she's a grown woman. She knows not everything is for everybody. So, I mean, don't be an asshole.
Right.
But, you know, feel free to constructively criticize. Well, I don't know. That's just my take on
it. Without being a racist about it. Because there's some of that going on out there, people.
What?
Which is not cool.
What? Elaborate. See, I'm not on social media as much as you guys.
There were some comments that were shut down immediately about casting Emily as African American and casting Agatha and Nathaniel as Aboriginal, and they're of the ilk you can imagine.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's a microcosm of the population, and unfortunately we've got that segment of the population, at least here in the United States, that
people suck, man.
I know.
People suck. And my only issue with Emily being black is, wow, that's going to be interesting. She's going to be the one black face in upstate New York.
Yeah.
Or maybe... And that's that's only because of my experience. I grew up in New York, but I didn't grow up in upstate New York. I grew up in suburban New York.
You married a Mainer.
I know. I wouldn't have met him without, you know, joining the Air Force. There's no way.
True.
Our paths would not have crossed. But I don't know. I didn't have a problem with that. And like Shelley said, they were always Aboriginals, Agatha and Nathaniel.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to come back to Angela. Anything?
No, it just kind of latches onto what you guys said about the TV fatigue, and I'm ready to move forward and to see, have it be whatever it's going to be. So, with that said, May 8th is The World of All Souls, The Complete Guide to Discovery of Witches, Shadow of Night, and The Book of Life. We are 6 months away from that, and that seems like a long time, but that's what I'm hitching my star to, because I can't wait. It's 600 plus glorious pages, and from what we saw at the con, the preview, it's going to be new information on the All Souls trilogy, and I can't wait. I mean, we've been slicing and dicing all of this All Souls trilogy books for the past 5 years, and to find out
it's
going
to be like a 3,000 piece puzzle to dump onto the white table.
Yes. Yes. So
I cannot wait.
I'm going to maybe do a countdown on my calendar already so I know exactly how many days I have left.
It is a perfect gift for Mother's Day.
Yeah, it is a chunky price, or chunkier than normal, $36 at least on Amazon, but I think it's worth going to be worth every page and penny.
Even though they denied us the gatefold pages.
I know.
I'm so bummed out about that. Yeah. But Deb tried.
For the record, she did try. So I'm going to end it, but not before saying, hey, regular listeners out there, if you like what we have to say, join Demonic Discussers, our Facebook group. Instructions will be on the show notes. I won't say anything further. Instructions, make sure you read the notes and the postscripts I write after that. That's it. Make sure you join the Facebook group if you feel like you're ready to tack on deeper conversation.
Or not so deep. Considering our Friday coffee post.
Yeah. All right. So you guys ready to say goodbye?
Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Demon kiss. Bye.
Mwah. See you next time, audience.
Of course, it's not over. We have two things for you guys. Thing one is we have a giveaway going on. This is our annual holiday giveaway, and we're gifting like Phoebe this year. If you want to participate in that, that'll be visit.demonsdomain.com/holiday2017. Thing two. Now, if you haven't been one to pay attention to the Discovery of Witches TV news that's going on, and a lot's been happening, we have a section on our website dedicated just to that. It's become a living document, so let me point you there. Go to visit.demonsdomain.com/AdowTVNews. That is Adow as in a Discovery of Witches TV news, all one word. On that page, you'll find the complete cast up to now. You'll find pictures that the actors have shared on set, cast and crew. And you'll also find a trailer video shared by Sky One TV. And then a Discovery of Witches TV also released official photos from on set with Matthew and Diana. And you can practically recite the quotes just by looking at these. So don't miss out. All right. I think that's it. Bye for real.